señores. Oye, oye, oye. United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Amanda L. Meredith presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near and you will be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. I am Judge Meredith. To my right is Judge Falvey, and to my left is Judge Jakeman. We are here today in the matter of Robert Cruz versus Dennis McDonough, docket number 21226. Will counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, please note your appearance for the record.
Yes, Your Honor. Brian Anderson from the law firm of Bergman & Moore. And
Lila Kanowski.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honor. Brandon Jonas for the Secretary of the Council Table and Deputy Chief Counsel.
Thank you. Each party will have 30 minutes to present their arguments. Mr. Anderson, do you wish to reserve time for rebuttal?
Yes, please, 10 minutes.
Okay, so noted. Mr. Anderson, you may proceed.
May it please the Court. The issue presented today is the interpretation of the effective date provisions of the Blue Water Navy Act, specifically 1116A, subpart section C. To begin, there is some agreement between the parties that the relevant clause, the relevant effective date clause at issue here, includes the second element of service connection. And in this particular case, that is going to be the exposure to herbicides, which is very closely tied to the nature of the veteran's service. Now, appellant's position is that this clause actually includes all elements of service connection and should be read naturally and consistently as is used elsewhere. The Secretary's position takes one step too far in his interpretation. He demands an exclusivity requirement be placed into this clause, and he does so despite the plain language of the reading of the clause, as well as the statutory scheme which is already put in place to solve the problem in which he is concerned about and brings up. So I'd like to go through some of the statutory canons as well as responding to his interpretation and position at the same time. The primary basis he advances is he relies on this exclusionary canon. But when he does so, he's making two big assumptions that I do not think can hold water. First, he's assuming that there's no nexus element, as we commonly understand it, as a third element of service connection within this clause. Now, he needs to do that, because if the exposure element, the second element, was the only requirement for the prior basis of the denial, the veteran could never satisfy nexus. He would need to, and he couldn't previously. So the Secretary needs to write it out, recharacterize it, and remove it from the statutory scheme. He asserts that these things, the third element doesn't exist. By law, things are satisfied together. But I think there's a confusion here between elements of service connection and evidentiary presumptions. Here we have two evidentiary presumptions. They're big ones. They're one on nexus and one on exposure presented. Simply because we have an evidentiary presumption that can satisfy an element of service connection very quickly doesn't mean the element of service connection goes away. We still have a nexus element. It just is quickly satisfied. So there needs to be a distinction between those two things. An example, again, on nexus. These presumptions are rebuttable in nature. So in a hypothetical case, if VA presented affirmative evidence in order to try to rebut the presumption, they can do that. I would say very much at stake in that sort of case, the element of nexus is still in play. So it still exists, and the parties will be arguing over it, and however that comes away. So the scheme doesn't remove this element. It's still there. It's just very easy to satisfy. That's the same thing with the exposure. The second element is still there.
Good morning, Mr. Anderson. So how is it easily satisfied then. It seems to me that the presumption is that if you have qualifying service, in this case Blue Water service, then, and you have a disease, a disability, then we're going to also presume the nexus, pretty much. Isn't that pretty much how it goes?
It's an evidentiary presumption, and yes, you would presume the nexus just as you would presume the exposure.
So it's not that, should we be looking at it then that it doesn't go away, but that it's, as you say, easily satisfied. It's easily satisfied by, if you have a disability and you have the service, we're going to also connect the two.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. You can easily do that easily. Now, it doesn't mean it doesn't disappear. It still exists. Just like the exposure requirements still exist, the evidentiary presumptions help you satisfy it very quickly. So I do think the nexus element needs to be considered as part of this clause, just like the exposure element is also part of this clause. It's all in there and should be read naturally together. So speaking on the plain meaning of this clause in itself, and then I'll expand the scope from there, but this is a commonly used and understood clause. This disease was not incurred or aggravated by service. It's used up in subsection A, the very same section here under 1116A. It's used elsewhere. It's used in 1110, 1131. It's used in the original 1116 Vietnam exposure elements. Every time it's used, it means more or less the same thing, and it means service connection. This is going back from the Federal Circuit, from the Shedden case that they developed interpreting what this means, and from the definition of service connection, the three prongs were extrapolated from that. So I think one of the core canons here is to read this clause consistently with how it's been used every time previously before, which again includes all three elements. You know, Congress could have easily rewritten this and written it in a much easier way that the Secretary wants it to be, which is could be denied by reason of no exposure. That would have been very easy for Congress to write, but that's not what the clause says. The clause says something a little bit
buttoned. Could Congress have, you say Congress could have written it more clearly to read the way the Secretary would like it read. Couldn't they have also written it more clearly to, so it read the way you'd like it to be read, by using the word a disease rather than the disease? Because can't you read the word the disease as that it's presuming that the there's a disability, that the disease was incurred? Otherwise, where if you wanted to say that the disability doesn't have to be established to take advantage of this provision, it seems to me it would read a disease.
So I read it as the pertinent section there, a disease covered by this section.
But you know, I'm talking about the last part, the part you just quoted. The disease was incurred or aggravated by service of the veteran. The claim was denied by reason of the claim not establishing that the disease was incurred or aggravated by service.
Right. So it has to be the same disease. I read that as that sort of reading would be too narrow because it would ignore the rest of the remaining of that sentence. So I read as the disease was incurred. I believe you have to read it together. And it, as that, and that phrase, as it is used together, as it is used elsewhere, is meaning the same thing as it is the disease covered by the claim that was filed for. So as long as it's the same disease claim, I believe that would be a too narrow reading of a word at the expense of the rest of the sentence remaining there.
Yeah, it seems that to me that the use of the disease presumes a diagnosis is already present from the previous claim.
I think I would say that would be again too narrow. But I would also go back to the purpose and the intent of looking at a little bit more of the statutory scheme as a whole. I note that the problem that the Secretary raises is, you know, there's a concern about compensating veterans for a disability that they don't have yet. And Congress, when they passed this act, was aware of that problem. And I would like to emphasize, you know, C1 and C2 as we go through that. And the effective date provisions, Congress has already developed a scheme to solve this problem. And that is, under C1, the effective dates are assigned still in accordance with 5110 of the title. And going back to what 5110 says, it's the date of the claim or the date entitlement arose. I think that later part, and it's whatever those dates are later, I think that later part there, the date entitlement arose, is important because it solves the problem. Section C2A just tells us, redefines what the date of claim is. But it doesn't say it must be the date of claim. It's still the date of claim as redefined, assuming you meet the eligibility criteria below, or the date entitlement arose. So the attempt to put in a requirement into that later clause to try to fix this problem, Congress has already fixed the problem and was aware of, you know, disabilities may come later, and the effective dates may be assigned later. I think it is much easier and more consistent to read the statutory scheme that's consistent and the effective date schemes is consistent with each other instead of trying to pigeonhole or create a new requirement into the clause based upon perhaps a single word or what it could or may have would have said.
Mr. Anderson, doesn't the beginning language in 1116A affording a presumption of service connection premised on a covered disease becoming manifest indicate that a demonstrated disability is a condition precedent to the benefits of the statute, including the effective date provision?
Under subsection A, I believe that generally establishes the evidentiary nexus rule. So I think that speaks to the nexus. When you're talking about nexus, you do presume you already have a disability. I don't think that speaks to how you interpret the effective date provision below, because the purpose of A is different than the purpose of the effective date and remedy section in the below clause. Similarly, under B, it establishes the exposure presumption, which together is also important for the low clause. For later clause too. So the answer to your question, yes, it does speak that because it speaks to nexus, it of course is talking about a current disability because you have to have one for nexus. But I do not believe that speaks to adding an exclusionary requirement into the later clause. Congress contemplated.
Council,
yes.
Could I ask you about a different portion of 1116 Big A? For the earlier effective date provisions to apply, there must have been an award of benefits pursuant to or under Section 1116 Big A. And in his supplemental brief, the Secretary points out that in March 2020, VA conceded that this veteran had both brown water and blue water service. Does the appellant concede that he had both blue and brown water service?
As a factual matter, yes. There was both blue and brown water service in this case. However, that memo, to refrain hopefully from a pun, but certainly muddies the waters, but I do not think it changes anything. The memo, which was added pretty late in the game here, doesn't speak to the basis of the 2014 denial.
In that regard, if you could look at page 2347, of the record. In the 2014 prior to denial, the RO includes under the section for evidence this line, military service personnel records showing confirmed RVN service. What's the significance of that statement? Did VA essentially concede exposure back in 2014?
We don't think that VA conceded exposure. This rating decision is not the one for the prior denial of the prior claim. So I think that's important because the eligibility criteria under B1 focuses on the reasons why the claim was denied and the reasons provided in the rating decision. So this is a separate rating decision earlier. Certainly, at the time, there was confusion, and you know, as appellant's position, there was no development either way as to the nature of the exposure. If we look in the other rating decision, you know, we have a statement that clearly says there was no events in service.
And was that in regard to direct service connection? Do you read the RO decision as having denied both direct and presumptive service connection previously?
I read the RO. Well, it's hard to put stock in an RO decision because just the nature of how they are formulated. I do read them as denying, yes, under multiple theories, under multiple bases. I point out that certainly there was no, you know, they'd certainly provided several different reasons. I think the most important reason is the very first one they provided, which was no event in service. I don't think that the eligibility of Mr. Cruz is ruled out simply because he had the brown water service. Certainly the rating decision said nothing about blue or brown water at the very first one here at this time. So we're left to somewhat speculate. But at the end of the day, if VA had conceded exposure, Mr. Cruz would have been sent for a VA examination, and the VA examination would have diagnosed him with his current disability, and his claim would have been granted. And at the end of the day, that was the purpose that Congress was thinking about when they passed this Blue Water Act, to help these veterans, these Blue Water offshore veterans, that their claim would have been granted at the time that they initially filed, and to remedy that defect later in time. That would happen with Mr. Cruz, both factually, specifically, and as a general matter. Congress designed these effective date provisions to be very, to encompass that, and to really be on par and consistent with, where they use the words consistent and parity with, NEMR veterans.
Go ahead.
Sorry. So the language itself, though, talks about that the current award had to have been pursuant to or under the Blue Water Act of Section 1116 Big A. And so if exposure had previously been conceded, could it be under or pursuant to this new liberalizing provision if the veteran didn't need that liberalizing provision in order to prevail?
I think it can. We don't punish veterans for pursuing multiple theories of service connection or anything. More than one theory of service connection can also be valid at the same time. We don't punish them for trying to pursue that. So I think that because he could still be, you know, he could or should or would have been approved for brown water, doesn't mean he's still not approved under the blue water provisions. We see this in other areas of law. We see this under 3.303. There's different ways to get service connection. You can use the presumptions to help you. You cannot. They can both support your case. We see this in the rating, you know, secondary versus aggravating decisions when it comes to ratings. If a board decision says you've only, your connection was, your service connected you based on aggravation, you would be rated based upon the difference from baseline. Well, there's prejudice there because you could still argue that I should be service connected on a direct basis. And you can still appeal that and pursue that theory. So simply because he could have been approved elsewhere, he still meets the language of the statute. He still can be approved to this section. And it's on VA's obligation to ensure that they are maximizing the benefits there and allowing him to receive the maximum amount of awards, even though he could be approved under multiple sections.
So would we be reading Section 1116 Big A to essentially be partly redundant of prior law if we read it as also allowing earlier effective dates for brown water veterans who were eligible for presumptive exposure prior to the Blue Water Act?
I don't think so. This statute very clearly applies to these offshore blue water veterans, and the language under Clause 2 says pursuant to this section. So there is a limitation here to simply blue water veterans. Certainly if Mr. Cruz was not a blue water veteran, if he was only a brown water veteran, this act would not apply to him, and we would not be here. So I don't see there being a redundancy there in terms of there being any sort of inconsistent application of law, which would be the real concern in that regard.
No, go ahead. Mr. Anderson, do you read 1116A as enabling veterans who served offshore of Vietnam and have no current covered disease or disability to submit a baseless claim to gain a retroactive effective date if they ever do suffer a covered disability?
I would encourage no veteran certainly to submit a baseless claim. Certainly that perhaps sometimes is in the eye of the beholder, but even if they did, the effective date for that would be assigned when they had manifest their current disability, as I read C1 and C2 together. So even if they did do that, they would not receive any money, any compensatory benefits until that disability manifested itself.
And what does that mean, manifested itself? In Mr. Cruz's case, does that mean 1991 or 2019?
Well, he had a disability since 1991, but he did file the claim, or his original claim, back in September 2013. So pursuant to C1, it would be the date, well, Mr. Cruz is unique exception, but it would be the date he filed the claim or the date entitlement arose, whichever is later. Now, in this certain case, he had the disability before filing the claim. That fact isn't disputed by any party. So whichever is later would still be the date of claim would be later in this case. Normally, it's the other way around. Veterans, to your question, veterans may file a claim, and the disability occurs later than the date they filed the claim. And in that situation, the date and time it arose under C1 would be the later date, even though he filed it earlier.
And is that what the date entitlement arose means, the date that he incurred the disability rather than the date that evidence of it was provided?
I see my time has expired, if I may answer your question.
We've added 3 minutes, counsel.
Okay, thank you. Yes, the common understanding of date entitlement arose in most cases is has been applied to the date of diagnosis or the date the disability was severe enough to cause functional impairment in that regard. That is how VA has commonly used the effective date provisions and interpreted that to mean that. And I think that's consistent with what's been done before, and it should be consistent as to what it's done now.
I have a question about the second criterion to qualify for the effective date provision. Neither party talks about this, but the second criterion is that the veteran submits a claim for disability compensation on or after January 1st, 2020, and Mr. Cruz was before that. It was in 2019. I read that as you need both, but I must be missing something here, why that's not an issue here.
Specifically the date?
Yes, January 1st, 2020.
Right. So certainly this would be a question for the Secretary, but as I understand it, a precedent opinion by the Office of General Counsel has, I believe it's 3-2019, has interpreted that date issue that you're bringing up, has essentially allowed an effective date exception to apply to claims granted under Procopio prior to the change. So that date is no longer a bar. Based upon that, and you know, we agree with that interpretation, and we've seen anecdotally claims done in order not to punish veterans who were gutted in too early.
I knew I must have been missing something.
Yeah,
nobody was talking about it.
It's a little bit of a quirk that thankfully that the Secretary has kind of massaged out there. No further questions. I can save the rest for reply.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Jonas, you have 3 additional minutes if you need them. Please proceed.
May it please the court. The court should affirm the board's denial of an earlier effective date for the award of service connection for coronary artery disease in this case. Mr. Cruz is not eligible for the Blue Water Navy Act's special effective date. Mr. Cruz filed a claim in September 2013, but that claim was denied for lack of diagnosis, not based on the geographic scope of his service in Vietnam. Therefore, Mr. Cruz does not meet the first eligibility requirement. He also fails to meet the second requirement because his claim was not approved pursuant to the Blue Water Navy Act. Mr. Cruz had brown water and blue water service. His claim was granted because he submitted medical evidence of a diagnosis during the pendency of the second claim. The Blue Water Act did not lead to a successful outcome in his case. Submitting the evidence of a diagnosis to the grant of his claim. Let's take a step back. The purpose of the Blue Water Navy Act, as the Congress House Committee stated, was to create parity between Blue Water Navy veterans who had been denied benefits since the Federal Circuit's ruling in Haas upheld VA's prior interpretation of the Agent Orange Act. Back then, VA interpreted the Agent Orange Act as requiring so-called foot-on-land service in Vietnam or service on the inland waterways, which was referred to as brown water service. They denied veterans who served only on the so-called blue water, which was in the large harbors of Vietnam or further out to sea offshore of Vietnam. In 2019, the Federal Circuit overruled itself and overruled the Haas decision and decided Procopio. And soon after that, Congress codified the new rule and stating that Blue Water Service was now eligible for the Agent Orange Act provision codified at 1116. 1116 Big A is the codification that we are here to discuss. And as the numbers indicate, it modified 1116. And those two statutory provisions must be read together. As this court had discussed with my colleague before, the 1116A provision relates to the disease that was claimed in the prior claim, and it must be from the list of diseases that are entitled to a presumption under the statute, under 1116, or in the Secretary's regulation 3.309. So the text and the structure.
In context, doesn't the disease refer to the claimed disease?
Well, it says
the claim was denied by reason of the claim not establishing that the disease. Doesn't that refer to the claimed disease?
Right. It refers to the claimed disease. And then also earlier in 1116 Big A, subsection small a, it says a disease covered by section 1116 of this title. So the diseases that are listed in 1116 are very specific medical diagnoses. There's diabetes mellitus, Parkinsonism, bladder cancer, hypothyroidism. Those are the diseases that were added most recently. But prior to that, there's several diseases that can only be diagnosed by a physician. And my colleague earlier was saying that supposing that in the prior claim in 2013, Mr. Cruz would have been given a VA examination, but that is not necessarily the case because under this court's holding in McClendon, the veteran claimant is responsible for submitting medical evidence of a diagnosis when he is claiming a disease such as this, coronary artery disease, or ischemic heart disease, where only medical evidence is competent to speak to whether there is a current diagnosis. So that is why in the 2014 rating decision, it was denied for lack of a diagnosis because, unfortunately, Mr. Cruz had not submitted his competent medical evidence at that time.
How do you explain the board completely ignoring the RO's statements that it denied the veteran's claim in part because the evidence did not show an event, disease, or injury in service, and because the veteran's IHD was not aggravated or caused by service?
Well, that language from the rating decision was when the RO was adjudicating service connection on a direct basis. So the Secretary recognizes that the language incurred or aggravated in service could be is in other places in Title 38, but the Secretary acknowledges that. However, in this context, when read within the structure of modifying the Agent Orange Act, it is a more natural reading to read it as dealing with Agent Orange presumption, which the rating decision dealt with in the latter paragraphs in its decision.
But it sounds an awful lot like the RO denies service connection for a failure to meet all three elements, doesn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, that is true. But as a matter of statutory interpretation, if the statute condition is read to encompass all claims that are denied for all claims that are denied would have been denied for not establishing service connection on a direct basis. So that would be no limitation. But the statutory limitation is in there, so this court needs to read some meaning into it under the canon of avoiding surplusage. So the Secretary's reading takes that into account and tries to effectuate the meaning of Congress by recognizing that a natural reading is to read it as denied for lack of showing service in the Agent Orange presumption context.
Doesn't make sense if you read it in the context of the Blue Water Navy Act, because it means that those statements are presumptively wrong based on the nature of the veteran service in Vietnam.
I'm sorry, Ron.
The statements about showing an injury in service and whether the IHD was aggravated or caused by service, citing those two elements, the RO relying on the, I mean, what really happened here, it seems likely, is that the RO just threw boilerplate in. They didn't make the kind of specific decision that you're arguing that they did. Isn't that right?
Yes, Your Honor, I do agree with that in this case, because the direct service connection, so under the old Brammer case, the essence of a claim is diagnosis. So if the appellant, as in this case, Mr. Cruz, does not establish a diagnosis, then all of the other elements, the RO need not even reach them. I mean, in this case, they put in boilerplate because it's a claim for service connection, and they need to advise the claimant that he did not establish service connection. But as a matter of logic, if there's no diagnosis, then there cannot be incurrence in service because there's nothing that could have been incurred.
That's true if we're talking about an original claim, but we're talking about a case where there is an incurrence in service, and the question is just whether the first claim affects the effective date. Is the test the same?
So, Your Honor, the test, well, I mean, this is a look-back provision, so we have to look back to what the VA regional office could not have anticipated that the Blue Water Navy Act would be here now when they wrote that decision. But we have to look back, and as Judge Meredith mentioned before, and in that rating decision, it does say that VA conceded exposure in the Republic of Vietnam. So we're also working with that fact.
Well, it just lists it as the evidence. It doesn't say that they conceded exposure. There are a lot of other questions raised by the listing of the evidence. The rating, July 2014 rating decision notes as evidence that the veteran was examined at a VA medical center in Richmond, Virginia, and that they had private treatment reports from the Sanger Clinic with Dr. Cook's name on them. Well, we find out later that Dr. Cook is the surgeon, the cardiothoracic surgeon who performed the coronary bypass surgery on the veteran in 1991. But there's no reference to that, no mention of it. The Sanger Clinic was the practice from which the veteran's attending physician came, according to the 1991 surgery report. So those things are all on the 2014 rating decision that we're told had no information about the veteran's claim of IHD.
Yes, Your Honor, but the parties agree that no current diagnosis was established in that decision. And therefore, in 116 big A, it says to set the effective date based on 5110, unless certain conditions are met. So 5110 mandates that for claims of new material evidence, as it used to be called, now called new and relevant evidence, the effective date can be no earlier than what it was in this case. So there's no, as my colleague stated, VA is punishing certain veterans, but that's not the case at all. There's no punishment of any veterans, but we're simply implementing Congress's intent by using 5110, which is the general effective date provision that applies to the vast majority of cases. And in this case, there's a special exception that we substitute in a prior claim date if certain conditions precedent are met. And then after we substitute in that date, then we apply 5110.
But that position depends on writing out of existence what the RO said about service connection beyond the absence of a disability diagnosis.
Well, Your Honor, no, it doesn't, respectfully, it doesn't write out anything. I'm not sure I follow.
The RO cites the language that I read to you earlier that fits within the BI claim was denied by reason of the claim not establishing that the disease was incurred or aggravated by the service of the veteran. And the board doesn't address that at all. And the secretary does the same thing and just says it didn't exist, didn't happen, doesn't matter. All that matters is that they use that nine-word sentence in three-quarter space that's devoted to herbicide exposure, the nine words that say you don't have a current disability, and that's the end of it.
Well, Your Honor, I think it helps to look at what position would the veteran have been at the time of the 2014 rating decision if the Blue Water Navy Act had been law at that time. So if Blue Water service was creditable towards the Agent Orange Act presumption at that time, would Mr. Cruz have prevailed on his claim at that time? And the answer is clearly no, because he did not establish a diagnosis at that time. So the Secretary recognizes that sometimes in claims, when the evidence is not submitted, in a later claim is granted, and there's a later effective date based on 5110, that can certainly seem unfair to veterans, but that is the effective date regime that Congress set up that VA is tasked with implementing.
Could I turn you back to the question of whether there's an award pursuant to or under Section 1116 Big A? So I don't think we get to the question of the reason for the prior denial until there is an award under the Blue Water Act. And you seem to acknowledge that in 2014 VA may have conceded exposure to herbicides?
Yes, Your Honor. It's the Secretary's position that either VA conceded exposure or did not reach the issue because there was no disability established, no diagnosis from the list. So in the rating decision, it cites the Agent Orange Act of 1991. This is record at page 2348. And then it runs through that analysis. And if there had been a disease that was on that list that where a current disability had been established at that time, then the RO would have discussed whether there was qualifying service at that time. But the rating decision did not reach that issue because there was no diagnosis.
So the language in 1116 Big A, that the new award must have been pursuant to or under the Blue Water Act, Does that rule out that it could have also been awarded under a different provision? Could it simultaneously have been awarded pursuant to the old law and 1116A? Does the fact that he's a Brownwater veteran rule out that he could also have been awarded under 1116A?
Your Honor, I wouldn't use the language rule out, but it doesn't. He would not have used 1116 Big A because his claim would have been granted under 1116. So
let me point you to page 7 of the board decision on appeal. And at the bottom of the page, it says that in 2020, through application of the Blue Water Navy Vietnam Veterans Act, the AOJ found that the veteran was presumed to have been exposed to herbicide agents. Did the board essentially favorably find that the new award was pursuant to the Blue Water Act?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, you're looking at the record of proceeding at page 7?
Yes. Okay. It's page 3 of the board decision.
Okay. The last paragraph, the AOJ granted service connection in April 2020, signed effective date. Through application of the Blue Water Navy Act, the AOJ found the veteran was presumed to have been exposed. Yes, well, the Secretary's position is that it was just inartful drafting on the part of the board, because for the purposes of this provision, the Blue Water Navy Act was not necessary to grant the claim. And getting back to the purpose of the statute, it was for Congress to codify the Procopio decision to grant claims of Blue Water Navy veterans who had been waiting all this time to establish claims based on their service on the Blue Water. It was not meant to put veterans in a better position than they were in before. It was to put veterans who had been denied before in the same position as other veterans who could establish their claims based on their service that wasn't.
So in that regard, many of the arguments that you've made today and that were in your supplemental memo deal with the purpose and the intent behind the Blue Water Act. Is there a disconnect between the actual words in 1116 Big A and the purpose and the intent? And does it literally cover brown water veterans, even if that may not have been the intent?
No, Your Honor, I wouldn't say there was a disconnect. I think that you can read it in harmony, that you can read the text of it and then also use the purpose and intent of the statute to reinforce the natural reading of it. Our position is that Mr. Cruz's position is untenable in sort of picking out certain elements of the text and using that to say that he's eligible under those picked out elements when read more broadly and in context and with the intent and purpose in mind, it's clear that he is not eligible because he did not establish diagnosis at the time of the first claim. If there's no further questions, the Secretary would ask that the court affirm the board decision.
Yeah. So, essentially, given the absence of a current disability, whether he was claiming direct exposure, brown water, presumptive exposure, or blue water exposure, he would not have been service-connected at any time until he satisfied that current disability prong. The lack of the current disability prevents him from receiving service connection under any theory.
Yes, Your Honor. That is correct, and that is Congress's intent that VA is tasked with implementing.
What of Mr. Anderson's argument that the intent was to put them on parity? The intent of the Blue Water Navy Act was to put Blue Water veterans on parity with the ground forces, blue and brown water Navy forces.
Yes, that is correct. But as applied to this case, Mr. Cruz is on parity with other veterans who filed claims and were not able to for whatever reason, established current disability and then submitted new and relevant evidence later, and then their claims later were granted. So Mr. Cruz is on parity with that class of veterans.
Okay. Thank you.
No further questions. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. I may first quickly return to the dueling articles of Clause 1 here about a disease versus the disease and provide a little bit clearer answer. To put it another way, I think the use of the a disease is covering a general term in terms of a disease among one of the diseases that is covered under the statute. And once we have identified that in the particular claim, you're now talking about a specific the disease at issue. So that's how I would properly characterize that. As to the basis of the prior denial and what happened before, I want to be clear, I don't want to portray our position as relitigating duty to assist errors in the old claim. Certainly, VA could have done a lot of things better in development, and Mr. Cruz could have done a lot of things better in hindsight. But at the end of the day, you know, under the VCAA, the veteran doesn't have to submit a diagnosis of a condition. He can allege symptoms. He can confidently allege he had one from a doctor. And, you know, it would be our position that he did do that. He was under the understanding, and VA was seemingly under the understanding that, you know, there would be no reason for it to go get an exam because there was no exposure. There would be a waste of time on VA's part, even if they got him an exposure. So we do believe that is a significant part of the reasons for the denial. As to the purpose of the act and putting Mr. Cruz on parity with other NEMA veterans, you know, I think it's helpful to look at what the NEMA rules are, and while it's certainly not controlling under 3.816, the Secretary did provide some interpretation there, and in those clauses there, he does spell out a little bit more clearly that the effective date is the later the date of claim or the date entitlement arose. So, again, I focus on the words, the date and time arose, and that is what Congress is aware of in contemplating situations like this, where there may be a disability coming later in time. And that would be a downstream issue of what the effective date could be. And, you know, we have consistent application of the law across statutes and across, you know, regulations, even with NEMA veterans itself. It would be very much the same. Now, certainly there's a lot of bad drafting on part of the VA here, both in the RO decisions and in the board decision. In this case, the regional office could have easily said one sentence, denied due to lack of exposure, and remained completely silent on the current disability, completely silent. And in that situation, under the Secretary's interpretation, you know, he would have won. He would have been eligible because he was denied solely based upon the lack of exposure. And we would have no other findings about current disability. So the stock we can place into the regional office decision needs to be limited to that effect. You know, anecdotally, they do just make checkboxes and throw things together very quickly. It is hard to tell in a lot of cases what the actual basis of the denial is. And certainly the interpretation of the statute shouldn't turn on the precise wording, exactly what happened there. Because, again, if the RO said nothing about current disability, Mr. Cruz would have won because that would be the only basis there. Certainly, you know, it is our appellant's position, as we argued in a brief, that reversal is warranted here under the correct standard of law. The factual issues in this case pertaining to when he had a disability, the date he filed the claim, are not really in dispute. To the extent there is a dispute, it's over what the prior basis of the denial was back in 2014. Certainly, appellant is pointing to many things, and you know, the Secretary does focus on other things. There is the confusion about the groundwater service. So to the extent there needs to be more fact-finding done, that is a job for the board to do. Certainly, the board decision here encompasses all this in three sentences. It does not reconcile with the multiple findings, whether he was truly denied due to lack of exposure or not. And again, that would be in our position a board fact-finding function. So while we do believe there's enough here for the court to accept the facts that because they're not disputed in this court, if there needs to be some further clarification on that, we do believe that remand would be appropriate for that. Certainly, there's not enough specific weighing and fact-finding here to affirm. There's a lot of questions left undone based upon the basis of the prior denials as well. And if there are no further questions, I can conclude. So in conclusion, Palantes requests reversal and assignment of the correct effective date, which was the date of claim, his original claim in this case, on the alternative remand would be appropriate for further fact-finding on the basis of the denial, applying the correct standard of law. Thank you very much.
Thank you to both counsel. The case is submitted for consideration.
All right.